Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jerry Roach's podcast. Continuing with Northern Heights, climbing North America's highest peaks, we are ready for Chapter 9, Alpine Style, Mount Hunter, 1994. Yes, the peaks are getting harder. Here we go. I was getting older, but equipment was now much better, and techniques and tactics had evolved to a higher standard. I now had a new friend, Chris Holland, who was just as passionate as I was about the northern peaks. He launched his own expedition to Mount Hunter and succeeded in reaching Hunter's 13,966-foot south peak that would later carry the name Mount Stevens. I heartily applauded his climb, but of course went on to badger Chris with the thought that if he really wanted to say that he had climbed Mount Hunter, he had to climb Hunter's main 14,573-foot north summit. Chris had also climbed Denali and Foraker and understood the logic and appeal of completing the family. We went to work to plan our Hunter expedition. We would tackle the West Ridge and attempt an alpine-style ascent where we would not ferry loads. We recruited two more friends, Quentin Keith and Tim Haig. Four strong, we landed at Kehiltna Base and immediately skied down and around to reach a base camp below our route. We would not climb from the toe of the ridge like Fred Becky and Heinrich Harrer did on their sensational first ascent back in 1954. We would climb a steep wall to reach the ridge beyond its lower difficulties. After an initial probe, we packed our kit as light as possible, made a nervous crossing of some avalanche debris, an area we dubbed Death on a Stick. Beyond this unsettling start, we started up our steep wall. There would be no chance for a pack-off rest until we reached a campsite. Using our conditioning, we climbed for hours, and with some consternation setting in, finally reached a flat spot near the West Ridge. We were quite happy to pitch our tents and settle in. The next morning, we faced a new obstacle, soft snow. Tim took off with a shovel while the rest of us belayed from camp and shouted encouragement. After 2 hours of shoveling, Tim reached harder snow close to the ridge proper. We probed a little higher to the base of a crux pitch of rotten overhanging ice right on the ridge. We returned to camp and prepared for an early start the next morning. We would attempt to reach the summit from this camp. Early the next morning, Chris did a masterful job of leading the overhanging ice, and the rest of us struggled up without falling. Above, the ridge was beautiful, and we moved out across a fairyland. Beyond the fairyland, we reached the famous Shield, which was a continuously steep section of the ridge. We carefully surmounted it with 10 belayed pitches. Above this, the angle relented, and we made good time up to the ridge edge of the summit plateau. From here, we could see the summit. It still seemed far away, but the terrain looked much easier. Strongman Tim took over the lead and stomped steps across the plateau with gusto. When the terrain steepened again, Chris did another two pitches that we could protect with rock gear. Higher, I took over the lead and started sniffing for the summit without breaking stride. I front-pointed up a final hump and we were there. We walked over to the edge and gazed steeply down to Kehiltna Base. We radioed the base camp manager and told her to come out of her tent and look for our wave. We waved with vigor, and she radioed excitedly that she could see us. That was fun. Our descent turned into a trial. Descending the Shield's 10 pitches took time, and the day slipped into the long, cold Alaskan twilight. Chris would wrap a pitch first, set a new anchor, Quentin and Tim would wrap, then I would clean the top anchor, down-climb the pitch belayed from below, and hand the anchor pro back to Chris. With so many pitches, we couldn't leave any gear at each stance. Having long since finished my 2 bottles of water, I would suck ice to get some moisture while waiting at each stance. I was aware that I was cooling my body temperature, but figured that the water was more important. I have a strong heater in my body and do not get cold easily. The careful march back across the fairyland warmed us, then one more wrap over the overhang and a short sprint brought us back to camp. It had been a 17-hour day, but we were safe. The next day, it was early afternoon before we could function. Chris was impatient and wanted to descend right away, but I convinced him that the snow was too soft in the late sun and that it was avalanche-prone. We had a good dinner, waited, and descended our steep entry wall at night. Pitch by careful pitch, down we went. Arriving at our little base camp in the morning, we quickly packed up and scooted back to Kehiltna Base. Our Denali family was complete. Back in Talkeetna, Chris and I researched park records to see how many people had climbed Denali, Foraker, and Hunter. It wasn't conclusive, but we figured that we were only the 7th and 8th climbers to have achieved the feat. This short list of just 3 peaks has far fewer finishers than any other list. I had put myself in the picture. Stay tuned for Chapter 10 from Northern Heights, Revenge, Mount Sanford, 1995.